Just trying to just got Australian, just one upped it right there, Hong Kong.
Trump card.
Bam.
So hello, everyone. It is 6 o'clock. My name is Paula Torres, and I will be your host this evening. Would everyone go ahead in that chat window and please introduce yourselves, telling us what you teach, where, if you've not done so already, and what your Twitter handle is, if you feel like sharing that. And while you're doing that, I'm going to tell you a little bit about how Global Math Department works. So, of course, you used a URL to get in this evening. Sometime later this evening, after the presentation is completely over, there will be a recording and you can get back to it the exact same way. So if you were unable to stay all the way to the end because you live in a different time zone and it's pretty late where you are, know that you can come back and watch the end of it. You just won't be able to participate. Also, if you have colleagues that you're thinking should definitely watch this, that's a way for them to come and watch it also. These meetings, of course, are recorded, and we do pride ourselves on being friendly and supportive. The chat window is available for topical and general conversation. I would encourage you, if you notice at the top of the chat window, there are some tabs. One that you are currently on says chat. Right adjacent to it is Q&A. So if you have questions, it would be great if you put them in there, because Jonathan would like to sort of hold those questions until the end, and it will just be easier for us to sort through them. I will be watching the chat window, so don't worry if you forget and you pop it in there. I'll catch that as well. Okay, I think that's it. So I would love to introduce to you Jonathan Clayton. He is a high school teacher from Houston, Texas in his 10th year, and he's taught Algebra 2, Pre-Calc, College Algebra, and two kinds of calculus. He also keeps up a really great blog that I would encourage you to go and read for the last 7 years at infinitesums.com. And you can find him on Twitter. I will put his Twitter handle in the chat window. So without further ado, I know he has some really amazing things to share with you. I will turn it over to Jonathan.
Hello, people. My name is Jonathan. Thank you for joining us this evening. My topic tonight involves a variety of classroom management and classroom logistic ideas, sort of try to give you a best idea as possible as how my classroom operates. It starts with a single goal that within a few days of the start of school, to convince my students that their time with me is going to be the best part of their day. I even put this into my first day of school opener. I say, hello, welcome. This is the best part of your day. If this is first period, I'm sorry. The rest of your day is going to be a downer. So as you know, if you work at a school long enough, you start to earn a reputation. So, I teach primarily 12th graders. So it's the kind of thing they've heard older kids talk about in the past, like getting to my room. So you earn a bit of a reputation. So in recent years, I've had to append that statement. This is going to be the greatest part of your day. I hope it lives up to the hype, because you never know what they might have heard happens in there. At the same time, I want it to be the best part of their day for the right reasons. So I want to establish that, yes, we're going to have some fun, but we're going to be productive at the same time. I've noticed kids can have a weird perception about what makes a quote great class. I'm reminded of a conversation I heard between some middle school students once upon a time. They were talking about this really fun social studies class and how it was the best, and come to find out they voted it such because the teacher sat at his desk and just played the movies every day. And I was like, is that really what you want out of your best class ever? So that's not the sort of thing I'm going for here. And before I get into specifically what I do, I want to talk about where some of my strategies are inspired from. But before I talk about my specific ones, I do have a poll question for you. So I'm not sure if it'll prompt you or not, but I'm going to turn a poll on here. And my question is what your favorite year of math was. Let me start that. Okay. All right. Seems like people have figured out how to answer it. My apologies if you're an elementary school teacher and that's your favorite, but I'm talking about your personal experience from sixth grade on. What did you like the best? Did I skip 10th? Oh, it was in the original version of the poll. I'm sorry. Okay, give it about 10 more seconds. Seems like most people have responded. Or you were withholding your vote because I didn't include 10th grade in there. Nobody liked, nah, true. Nobody, maybe nobody liked 10th grade. All right, I'm going to close the poll. Okay, so that's interesting. A lot of people said sixth grade. It's very evenly distributed. I wasn't super sure what results I was going to get, but seems like everybody has a favorite all over the board there. If you didn't get a chance to vote, you can go ahead and shout out your favorite math teacher in the chat if you would like. My personal inspiration comes from two teachers in particular. I don't know how that happened there. The first one was my sixth grade math teacher. His name was Mr. Richardson. And at the school I attended, he was the legend. So I went through a K-6 elementary school, and there was this buzz about him you would hear from the older students. When you got to sixth grade, you needed to have this guy. So the school was big enough to where there was usually two choices, and you know, you were randomly assigned one or the other, but you needed to have this guy. He had a counterpart in social studies that was equally like the guy to have. Turns out they were best friends. But sadly, I only got one of the two. I did not get the social studies one. And so what did he do specifically that made it such an impression on me? This is, you know, over 20 something years ago. And it was first and foremost, so he was extremely organized. So he organized us into teams. These would change throughout the year. They would be randomly assigned. His desks were set in little pods of four. Everyone had an assigned job. You had to elect like a president, vice president. I forget the exact titles, but everyone had a position within the organization. You had to draw up a company logo. He had an in-class economy. He took dollar bills and photocopied them down really super tiny. And each week you'd earn a salary depending on what your job was. And he operated a store. It was up near his stool where he taught from, by his desk. And you could trade it in for all kinds of things. He had like little trinkets or homework passes or that sort of thing. But you know, stickers or whatever, you could spend your money in his store. And how this guy kept track of 150 some odd salaries, I'm not sure, but everybody got paid every week with reliability. He'd come around and say, payday, hand you your money. And he also gave us interesting problems. So he had a curriculum to tackle, but he went out of his way to sort of present interesting scenarios. So one, and I still have it, I took this picture only a couple days ago, was a travel project. So this took place over the course of multiple weeks. You had to plan a road trip. It had to be a minimum number of miles, and you had to track all of the expenses in a very 90s fashion. So you had to fill out a checkbook and balance that checkbook throughout the thing. You had to write the checks that you were going to give people as you went to your destinations. He also was the sneakiest direction writer I ever met. The intent was to teach you to pay attention. There was always some little treat hidden in his directions. And I was not very good at these. I don't think I ever, very rarely would I find them on my own. but I still enjoyed them. But the most important thing that I come to have appreciated now that I'm a teacher is that he respected everybody in the room. It didn't matter that everyone was 11. If you came up with a clever method, he would name it after you. And he would tell other class periods like, oh, you guys need to hear about the Michael method. Like, it's pretty impressive. And he also, despite having our individual seating chart groups, he was also grouping and regrouping people based on their needs. So if he felt like you could handle something different, he would group you with other kids the same, and you would have specific assignments all ready to go, specifically tailored to you. And he never made a point of saying, you guys are the advanced or the middle or whatever. It was just sort of like, hey, this is what you need. I'm going to put you over here with this group. And he expected you to keep everything super organized. And at the time I was horribly, horribly organized. So I was always losing things. I felt bad. Other influence was my 12th grade calculus teacher. Her name was Miss Westerfeld. She still works at my high school. And compared to the other guys, she was completely different. So a lot simpler, not nearly as many things to keep track of. Just desks and rows. She taught from an overhead. It wasn't anything special, but she did two things very consistently. One of them was she'd complain about George W. Bush all the time. Primarily it was because she was from Crawford, Texas, which, if you remember, that's where his ranch was. So she was always hearing the moaning about the disruptions if ever he was coming to visit. But along with that, she would also let you know on a regular basis that she cared about you and your well-being. And twice a year, she would do things that, nobody ever told her to do, but she decided, like, this is what my kids need. So she'd sit everyone down and read you a story. So right before winter break, she would read us the Polar Express, and she had gotten little jingle bells to give to everybody. So you sat down, we read the story, and she gave you a little jingle bell at the end. And then at the end of the year, she would make the whole class write one nice thing about everybody else in the room. So what you do is she'd give you like a week heads up. She said, hey, we're doing nice things on this day. And you would have to go like list out the classmates and write out your, and so my class had 12. So I had to write 11 nice things. And then when it came time for nice things day, you'd sit around in a circle. You'd take out she'd give you a big index card. You'd write your name on that. And then you would start passing it around. And as the cards came to you, you would pull off your nice thing and write it on there for that person. And at the end, and she would sit in the circle with us, and she would add her nice thing as well. And she did this for 150 students. She always would worry about having to come up with something nice, but she found it was a way to keep her attitude in check. She's like, I got to say something nice about this kid at the end of the year. But other days of the year, she would just get down to business. There was homework, there was challenging tests and everything, but you loved coming into her room. It didn't matter that she was going to give you a lot of work to do. You liked doing it for her. And so I try to send several important messages to my students. I never say these things out loud. I let the actions speak for themselves. And the setup of my classroom is integral to this process. So this is a panoramic picture of my room. It's a little extra, I admit. The main details are, so there's six very large tables, six seats at each. So at maximum capacity, you can put 36 kids in here. The room isn't particularly large, but I've found this seating is a very efficient way to group kids and make it still feel comfortable. So the television screens, those just mirror. So whatever is up on the board, quote unquote, it mirrors all the way around so that everybody has a sort of front seat. I admit that's a little much, and I'm not saying you have to go run out and do that, but you could just as easily replace those with vertical whiteboards for working or that sort of thing if you've only got one projector. But the grouping is really the key here to making kids enjoy their time with me. The students sit in semi-random groups throughout the year. So the goal is to have them build an identity with their table mates. If we do a group activity, kids work with their table. If we have a contest, kids compete with their table. If it's time for classwork, they will do it with their table. I have this little arbitrary board that goes up at the front. So the six colors are white, red, yellow, green, blue, purple. Those are just the colored index cards I could find at home at Office Depot. So it worked. So this is a little points game they play with each other. It doesn't have any rules or anything. It's a whole thing. If it's time for classwork, they'll do it with their table. And the interesting thing is that if I start flirting with the idea that I'm going to rearrange seats, some of them will give me the biggest stink eye if I even think about breaking them up. And what's fascinating about this is these are from kids who are like six random strangers on the first day of school. So like the table was assigned completely arbitrarily. And I do this because at the beginning of the year, schedules are a little bit in flux. So it usually takes a couple weeks for things to settle down. So I just kind of scatter people around. And then as kids get moved around or whatever, I do a rebalance. I do a rebalance a few weeks in. And the kids give me opinions like, hey, do you want to keep working with this person? Like, oh, or is your one friend over there? Usually they have a choice. I say you can pick one location or one person to stay with. That's all your input. And then I will decide from there. And the fascinating thing is, so like six kids randomly assigned, never knew each other, didn't know each other at all. Really prior to the first day of school, they are like, don't you dare break us up. And I'm like, you just met, like, why are you so good friends? And a couple of these, have done things like, so they'll ask me like, you know, winter break will be rolling around. They're like, can we do a secret Santa? And I'm like, for the entire class. They're like, no, just for us. I'm like, okay, sure. And, it's the most adorable thing I've ever seen. So they'll bring their little gifts and do a gift exchange, just the six of them, like with everybody else watching. I've had several students, I've taught several students for multiple years, and these repeaters, they'll come in and they'll want their table back. And it doesn't matter if the kids are different. They're like, no, that's my table. That's who I belong to. So why would a kid care so much about a seat? Even to the point where, so this is a sidewalk chalk activity we do at the end of the year. And these five individuals, they even came up with a name for themselves. So they sat at the green table and they dubbed themselves the Green Kingdom. They had signs and everything. I'm like, okay. And the main thing is I want kids to understand that you're welcome in the room. So that starts with greeting them at the door and greeting them by name. This is a, you know, not uncommon practice. I've been the quiet kid in a lot of classes when I was younger. And in those situations, I never felt like the teacher really knew who I was. Like they didn't go out of their way to get to know me, or I wasn't even sure they knew my name. And I sort of decided, I was like, I'm not going to do that to my kids. I want them all to know that I notice them on a regular basis. And a few years ago, I started giving them all high fives as they leave. So when the bell rings, I'll be standing at the door and I'll high five them and say goodbye to them on the way out. I've been doing this since 2015. Glenn Waddell, that's him right there, gave a presentation on this in 2015, talking about the power of a simple thing, giving a high five to a student. And since implementing it, I have given about 75,000 high fives. I've had to wash my hands about four or five times a day now. And it's the kind of thing where it's a very subtle thing. And you would think kids would get sick of it, you know, doing it every single day. But I teach a lot of seniors, as I've said, and by the last day of school, like some of them are legitimately depressed that, it's their last high five. They'll get their phones out. And they'll record their last one for posterity's sake. If they happen to see me at the graduation ceremony, they'll sort of run over to try to steal an extra one. And so that's sort of how we begin and end. And then during class, I also want them to understand that you can relax in here, right? We're not, you know, there's nothing special happening in this room. It's just you and me and we're hanging out. So if I have to talk in front of the whole group, I'd like to treat it like a discussion. And so kids are allowed to interrupt me at any point with a question. Initially, they'll be very polite and they'll try to raise hands or all that, but they figure out pretty quick that I want them to just jump in. Like we don't have to necessarily adhere to the formalities. If I ask them to think about something and prepare an answer, they're not allowed to just shout out an answer. We want everyone to have time to think. You know, not everybody's going to come to the same conclusion right away. And so if I, you know, then eventually if I hear answers, I'll do things like I'll never confirm something as right or wrong unless there's a consensus. So do I will, you know, if somebody says five, I will wait to see if somebody else will say five, and we'll see if the whole room agrees and everybody will start nodding. But you might have a random kid say, oh, well, I think three. And the idea is to never disparage them for saying three. I want to encourage them to bring in their different thought, because, well, sometimes they wind up being correct. And so we'll ask, we'll say, well, why did you think three? And someone else who wasn't willing to say that might be wondering the same thing. They're like, yeah, why wasn't it three? And this kind of thing I find is very healthy. So kids have told me, you know, several times that they feel comfortable making mistakes. Like they're not afraid of anything. And so this kind of, simple procedure works well for that. And if I make a mistake, I will let them know, like, hey, look at what I screwed up. Like, oh, well, I messed up something on the homework solutions this week. My bad. You know, sometimes I'll explain how I made that mistake. And, you know, I want to tell them, like, you should never be afraid to be incorrect in front of the group. And I won't be either. I also encourage them to ask off-topic questions. Often I'll acknowledge it and deal with it later. Often I'm the one who will come up with the off-topic remark. Like if they're talking and like some song comes on, I'll ask some question about whatever. I'll derail from time to time. I can be very easily distracted. So kids will want to know where I went to high school. So, you know, we'll pull up the maps. I'll show them where I went to high school. Kids want to know where I live. This might be a common thing. They're like, oh, hey, where do you live? And I will show them this house. And they're like, really? I'm like, oh yeah, I totally live there. And they're like, what? No way. I'm like, yeah, you know, this is the southern half. This is the fall part of the mansion. This is the summer part of the mansion. You know, I'm transitioning right now between halves. They're like, no. And I'm like, yeah. And, I don't know. They fall for that one pretty easily. But I might also ask, you know, I might have a random question. I might have a random question about a football game, and that might encourage a band kid to bring up a story. And, you know, I'll let the story play out. You know, everybody might want to hear this. So the other day, coincidentally, to you North Carolina people, we happened to be asking, kids happened to be talking about hurricanes. So we spent some time discussing the current ones that were out there and what it would take to track to us again, because we have a very fresh memory of this. And I want to tell them that, like, it's okay to be curious about stuff like this. And it doesn't always have to be about the current discussion. It's a way of saying, like, I care what you're up to and your stories are interesting to me. So we entertain this idea, but we'll move right back to the main discussion, and the kids were fine with it. So when I say, you know, distraction over. And I think in a certain way, this helps them absorb what we're talking about a little better. So we, you know, we'll talk about a burst of math for 5, 10, 15 minutes. And then if we take a 1 minute diversion, that might help them, that might give them the processing time they need. So like when I bring it back up, like, you know, sort of subconsciously they've worked through something, or all of a sudden they're like, oh, okay, it had time to settle, if that makes any sense. I don't view my curriculum as so sacred that we have to, that we can't take a second to deviate about something. And then the last message is that, you know, despite all the distractions and all the silly stuff, which I'll get to some of the silly stuff in a bit, but, you're going to be productive in here. Right. So you're going to have a good time, but you are going to get a lot of stuff done. And that's where I structure the room around the students. So with the grouping, the main idea there is that most of the time I want the students facing each other so that when work time comes around, they are encouraged to just start talking to one another. So like, you know, kids facing other kids, they are super prompted to just start talking. Like they don't need to, there's no effort involved. They don't have to get up and move a desk or turn around or anything like that. It's just ready to go. So student work time is my favorite. So as much as possible, I try to devote class time to their ability to get work done. And so this is also when I secretly spend time getting to know them. So as they work, I will wander around. So as I said, there's six tables and I kind of have a prescribed path I will follow. And I'll, you know, look over someone's shoulder for a second, or I'll just listen to kids discussing a problem. I won't say anything in particular, but, you know, I'm just trying to see what they're up to. And, you know, most of the time it is working. And if in doing this, so the table knows that it all come around again. They'll just sort of wait till I get nearby and they'll kind of wave me over and they say, hey, we have a question. And I'm like, okay. So one kid will ask the question and then you'll see the whole table stop. So they might have all sort of gotten on the same, stumbled in the same place. They'll perk up, they'll listen to the question. We'll have a little mini discussion, the five of us, and then I'll move on. If I pass a table that hasn't said much in a while, I'll just kind of stop in and see how everybody's doing. I'll just be like, you know, hey, everything going fine? And they'll be like, yep, you know, you all right, you all right, you all right. You know, just kind of having that, letting a kid know that, you know, hey, I spoke to you today. So, you know, during class time, I try to have said something to every kid in the room. And this can be hard to do, but I usually am able to pull it off. And again, if kids are working and they're off topic, like this is fine. Like, you know, natural kid order. 99% of the time they'll be back on topic within a couple minutes. If I notice that they're taking longer, or the key sign is, you watch for the pencils to hit the desk. So if I look over and there's like four or five pencils just sitting there on the table, I'll kind of walk over and say, didn't we have something else we were supposed to be doing right now? And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. And back they go. And what facilitates this aspect to it is student notebooks. So everything my kids do and every assignment we do is in that notebook. I've been doing this for several years. It's a big, big winner. And it's also sort of my physical artifact of what they did at the end of the year. So a kid can take their notebook full of assignments and they'll sort of stop and say like, oh, okay, yeah, we did do a lot of stuff in here. And it's also helpful too, because the class work time stuff. So, you know, if a kid is struggling, which happens often, since I've yielded so much time to them, there's plenty of time to kind of walk around, like as I'm walking around. And I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself there. So if you're interested in my particular brand of notebooks, there's that link right there. I will drop it into the chat room here in a second, but if you want, I'll leave it up there for a second while I'm talking. So that link will take you to my particular brand of notebook style. And what's helpful is, again, so if a kid is struggling, or if they don't seem to know what they're doing, I'll grab a seat next to them at their table or kneel down, walk them through it. You know, they'll want to quit or whatever. And, you know, we can have a little personal one-on-one conversation. Like, no, I think you do know what you're doing. You know, let's show me this. You know, I let them know like, hey, if you need to go slower, we can go slower. It's not a big deal. I'll wait patiently for them to rewrite something or correct a mistake or fiddle with the calculator. You know, if I give them something to do, I can like sort of check in on the kids around them while they're working as well. And it's long term, it pays off, like, you know, taking the time to talk with kids one on one in this way. Because last year I had a student, she was in 12th grade. She was in a college algebra course I taught, and she struggled with almost everything. I was over her in her neck of the woods almost every day if we were doing something new. I helped her individually, like we would sort of talk through a problem together. You know, I'd have her work the steps, and then I'd kind of say, thank you, Paula. I'd kind of work through the steps and say, you know, hey, show me. And, but then, you know, there were some days where she was like, no, I don't need you today. I'm like, okay, you don't need me. And, if it came time for checking stuff, I'd call kids over and have them check stuff, and she would rush over and she'd be like, look what I did all by myself. And I'm like, man, that's something right there. Like it's hard to put into words, like that kind of feeling, like, you know, 12th grade girl, and this is the first time she felt like, you know, math class was somewhere where she could be successful, and she was super excited about it. And sort of the last point here, before I get into some other stuff, is to reiterate to them is like, you know what, this is your math class, yeah, but we're a little family that meets together on a regular basis. We'll celebrate each other's successes. You know, if somebody's got a problem, we'll help them through it. And I do that, so the wandering helps with that. So, you know, I'll jump into their conversations. And throughout the course of the school year, you know, so each, you know, kind of, again, in a given class, there might be six tables of kids. I try to develop an individual relationship with each table. So if I walk over, like, you know, there's certain beats we hit or jokes we have with just them. And it really gives them sort of like, you know, the way I view it is during my wandering time, like each table knows that they can have 5 minutes with me if they want to have 5 minutes with me. And I'll just stand there, you know, it's just the five of us talking if that's what they want. And that's really the big signal. Like you as a student in my room, you can have my attention like whenever you need it. You are not bothering me. And this family aspect, again, comes from my calculus class. So the calculus class I was in, there was only 12 of us. So, you know, only so many people to talk to. And me being the smart aleck I was back then, I gave us a name. I called us the Dirty Dozen. At the end of the year, so another thing our teacher would let us do is you could decorate a ceiling tile. Fire marshals aren't super keen on this practice these days. But she would pop a ceiling tile out of the ceiling there, and she would bring it down and let you decorate it. And this is ours. This is actually a very recent picture. This is from 2017. I went back to visit her and I said, hey, do you still have our tile up? And she's like, oh, absolutely. It's right where you left it, which is amazing to me. So her whole ceiling is just filled with these things. And kind of the premise behind the tiles is she had this little joke where if she gave a quiz or a test or something, she'd be like, oh, it's open ceiling. And I'm like, what do you mean by open ceiling? And then you would look up and be like, oh. Some of them would have like informative things on there. So we decided, you know, like on our tile, we're going to have, you know, sort of dumb stuff. So not particularly useful things up there. You know, the kind of things that high school kids find funny. And so it's interesting that like this little tile is a nice encapsulation of who we were as a class. Like this was us. This was the 12 of us. And again, they have tons of these things, and other teachers that now work there have adopted this style too. Like you can just like, it's amazing to me that she still has the room to keep these. She eventually taught my younger brother and sister, and they both have tiles up there somewhere. So let's bring this to, the biggest sort of family aspect I have. And that is, an initiative I call Varsity Math. I took over the calculus program at my high school 5 years ago. At the time, kids were pretty apathetic about AP courses in general, especially the math one. So, you know how kids like to talk. You'll hear it's difficult. And if a kid hears something's difficult, they're like, oh, I don't want that. And so you'd have a lot of them enrolled, and they'd only be enrolled for like 3 weeks, and they'd be like, ah, nah, this isn't for me, and they'd drop. So one of the first goals I wanted to change was, I said, can we improve this attitude? Can we make AP math a more positive aspect on our campus? So, you know, statistics and calculus. So Varsity Math is an initiative for AP statistics and calculus students at my school. It's become our sort of signature institution. A lot of people within our district are well aware of this little bit of nonsense that we have. Younger students within the high school will ask for it by name. Because we self-promote. So sort of here's as a kind of accident of history is really where this all came from. So it started with t-shirts, and now it has expanded into a full-blown merchandising line. So we have t-shirts, we have stickers, we have patches on lanyards. You can see in this girl's picture right here. We have sunglasses as well. There, this is one of my favorite poses of this. So she's wearing her sunglasses and she's got a patch on, got her t-shirt on. We also have Snapchat filters. So we had a particular day last November where we decided to all wear our shirts, and I bought a Snapchat filter for the day to kind of like get the other school kids at school wondering like what in the world are we up to here. And then we also have events. So I also said, you know, hey, why couldn't we throw a party? So at the end of the year, I bring in a company to our cafeteria. We play laser tag in the cafeteria. We have about 60. So there's about 100 kids enrolled in our AP statistics and calculus courses. roughly 70 of them will come out to this party that we have at the end of the year. So we play laser tag. We leave one of the gyms open. They can play around in. We have, we serve them food. You know, and this is all paid for by the kids. I tell them, you know, hey, I'll do this stuff for you. I mean, it does cost some money. So I charge them a fee and they all turn it in, and, you know, they are, super happy, when it's time for the merchandise, especially now. So again, it's become quite a thing, around the school to be one of those kids who has the shirts. So it's gone from something that's been, you know, relatively apathetic, you know, oh, AP class, like who cares? Like, oh, that sounds hard, to something like kids want to be in. The sort of end result is that our drop rate in our AP courses has plummeted. So it's almost nothing. Really, the only reason kids leave AP classes now is because of schedule conflicts. Really, nobody is asking out, because they know this is a desirable thing to be a part of. And, AP exam. So with that, you know, AP exam performance has been ticking up as well. And the best story, well, I'll get to that in a minute, but, so in addition, so an issue with this club is, so it's primarily seniors. So, you know, 99% of your, well, actually, yeah. So 98% graduated. There's about 100 kids in it last year, and only two of them were in 11th grade. So only two of them have returned who even remember anything about it. So a few years ago, we established a permanent, monument, down the hallway from my room. So this is where I put up, photos from past years, or when we do the sort of dress up day, I'll take photos. That grid of nine thing is from our, promotional day last year. Here in about, 5 or 6 weeks, we'll be doing it again. And, you know, merchandise day is a big deal. Like, the kids are super excited about it because their time has arrived. Like, they're a part of the legend. Silly things. So you may or may not have heard of this, like, goofy, Baby Shark song that's been making its way around YouTube. My own personal experience with that goes back a few years to this summer camp I taught and some kids that found it. We've adopted it sort of as our theme song. If you haven't heard it, just, you know, go on YouTube, type Baby Shark song. You'll be inundated with videos that have hundreds of millions of views. It's that goofy song is kind of another way to where we sort of let kids know, like, hey, you know, we're in calculus, we're in AP math and you're not. Cause that song has been played at prom, twice now. That is a whole other thing. And then the big one, the one that I didn't even see coming, because again, the kids were inspired to do this all by themselves, is, so on dress up day, last year. So again, the day that I said, you know, hey, we're all going to wear the shirt, sunglasses, all that stuff. When lunch ended, many of them came a running to my room, very excited about something. And I said, okay, what, you know, what did you do? And they're like, we had a parade. I'm like, you did a what now? So this group of kids, so this is, you know, some small fraction, a group that happened to have that same lunch together, decided that towards the end of lunch, they were just going to get up and they started parading around the cafeteria. If they saw other kids in the shirts, they grabbed them and, said, hey, come on, we're having a parade. They just marched around the cafeteria. The principal was tolerant of the idea. He didn't love the idea, but, you know, they had a parade, and then some poor girl, they spotted her from afar. She had a birthday balloon and they were like, oh, and they went over and they sang her happy birthday, all like, however many kids are in this picture. And I was like, okay, that girl, I'm sure she had, it's a memorable birthday. In some way, shape, or form, my high school calculus teacher inspired these, you know, 40 odd kids to have a parade at lunch about how they're in an AP math class. This is the group shot from last year. So we have a yearbook ad as well. So, you know, there's enough of them to where we had to do pictures in the gym. It's like a whole thing. So that's the group shot from last year. Again, there was about 100 of them. And yeah, this is our AP math family. So it's even extends beyond, like, you know, my individual, your time in my classroom is a big deal, but I also want you to feel like you belong to something in the school as a whole. And you know, this, the wrestling belt as a whole, that's a whole thing there. There's a lot going on in this picture. you know, the idea, and, you know, 100 seniors represents about, at our school, is about 20-25% of the senior class. So a big significant portion of the senior class is involved in this thing. You know, if you were to compare it to other organizations, it's one of the largest organizations in the school, bigger than some of our athletic programs. So in summary here, I'm about done. But let me leave you with some takeaways, because the main idea I want you to understand is I'm not telling you that to have a successful classroom that you need to run off and start your own merchandise line. You know, if you want to, I can help you out, but that is not something you feel like you need to go and do. I admit up front that a lot of this is a little ridiculous, and some of this stuff will take a lot of time to pull off. But the main thing is that, you know, even your most difficult students like want to learn something. Like, kids have this idea, like they want to accomplish something for you. So it's a way of like, how do you convince them, like, okay, like I can give that to you. Kids, especially as they get older, become very aware of what their classes demand of them, and they will adjust their efforts appropriately. So if they know that, you know, English class is going to be a joke because, like, oh, the teacher is just going to sit over there and they're going to pass out a worksheet and then she's going to sit at her desk the entire time, they'll treat it as such. Like, you're going to get what you put into it. And the way I see it is, like, the biggest compliment kids can pay me is when they'll spontaneously say stuff like, man, like, class went really fast today. And I'm like, yeah, huh, I wonder how that happened. Or, you know, even at the end of the year when they realize that, like, oh man, I really do a lot in here. Like, I think I do the most work in this room. Like, that tells me, like, what I'm doing is working. If I were to pick one thing from this, like the biggest, like the thing that's going to help you, would make the biggest change, that is, you know, find a way to yield as much class time to students as possible. So I structure lessons to be very condensed. If I have to talk in front of the whole group, I try to keep it, you know, 15 minutes or less. Or if it's got to be longer, like, we'll take pauses. Like, that's sort of what the side discussions are about. If I do spend an entire day talking, I try to sort of supplement that by saying, like, all right, I talked the entire time on Monday. Tomorrow, we're just going to do some classwork. Let me give you some time to work with the ideas that we talked about. In one extreme case, so a college algebra class I taught last year, I quit whole group instruction entirely. I just stopped getting up in front of them and talking. And I never said, like, hey, this is what we're going to do. Like, I'm just going to stop talking. I just kind of started saying, you know, like, you know what? Here are your assignments. They're a little self-guided. So I started building in instructions into them and say, okay, you know, here's task one, here's task two. You know, and there'd be a little instruction that says, hey, when you finish this, get my attention. And, you know, sort of the way it worked is everybody would sort of do the first part and then I would wander around. We'd have a talk about what they may or may not have discovered in there. You know, sort of a little class for five or six people. And then I would do that again. So three or four times around the room. And then I would say, all right, so now you can complete this longer assignment. And, you know, off they would go. And you had kids being in a lot of different places. And that was fine. I was kind of like, you know, I sort of operated that class in week blocks. I said, all right, this week you need to accomplish this, whatever day that does or does not happen. It is fine. And this group of kids, they just came to expect it. They knew, like, when they walked in, like, no, nobody's going to get up there and talk at them for 50 minutes, but I know something is going to happen, within a few minutes here. And, the big winner there was I had this girl who was a very difficult student. She would have some attitude some days, but, like, she generally just, like, she wanted to accomplish something. Like, you know, yes, she was a little hard to deal with at times, but she wanted to do stuff. And even she, like, you know, if it seemed like I was taking too long to pass out the thing, she would be the one to be like, hey, you know, where's our work for the day? Like, you're gonna get to it, right? And I'm like, yes, you know, absolutely. Yeah, so, like, yielding the time to the kids, like, classwork is your time as much as possible. So, you know, take opportunities to sit down with them, build in opportunities to chit chat with them. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be about math, although if you're having a good time, you can. In an extreme, so this year, in an extreme example, So this is a picture from my BC calculus class. Like, we try to do this. I'm trying to implement this on a regular basis where we take the two tables and we're just going to push them together, and we're all going to sit around the dinner table and talk about our work. And, you know, once they've had an opportunity to figure some things out, I'll sit down with them and, you know, we'll talk. And, you know, notice here, like, the emphasis is on the kid in front of them. It's not about can they see the board or not, or can they see me? It's, you know, them looking at each other. So, like, you know, this photo really says something to me. I was like, yes, like, this is what I would want out of a math class. Like, just us hanging out, sitting around the table talking. So there's a lot more here. I don't necessarily have time for everything. I tried to sort of hit in the high points there. You know, I hope this gives you at least, you know, something to take home with. And, you know, in conclusion, you know, thank you very much for letting me share. And I'll put that photo back. People seem to like that one. So let me see what there was for questions. Please provide the, okay. Paula, could you put the notebook link in the chat? Paula did put it in there. I'm not sure if it got it at the time. How long are your class periods? So our schedule is a little weird. We do, so we 3 days a week, we have 7 50-ish minute periods. And then, 2 days a week, we'll do block periods. What do they call it? I think in schedule terms, it's called a modified block. So, thank you, Paula. Like I said, so like Monday we'll have 7 periods, Tuesday we'll have 7 periods, and then like Wednesday you'll go to first, third, fifth, seventh for an hour and a half a piece, and then Tuesday will be second, fourth, an advisory period, and a sixth period. That's sort of a compromise that got struck between. Can you not see the photo that's up there now? The slides. Maybe they're not showing. I don't know if you're on a phone or something. So that schedule was sort of born of compromise. Like, you know, as you know, the science teachers want time to be able to do labs because labs are time consuming. But the you know, the math teachers or, well, whoever might not necessarily want to do 90-minute blocks all the time. So sort of the thing was like, all right, so you have, you know, once a week you can have a 90-minute period to kind of relax and get stuff done. And I actually kind of like it. I like the having the 190-minute period because you can build in longer activities. So that's our bell schedule. If we have to do projects or something, that's usually what I'll do, is I'll save them for those 90-minute days. Do kids buy their own shirts, glasses, and so on? Yes. So the Varsity Math, I charge them a fee. It's kind of like a club, except we don't have any meetings and we don't have any officers. But I say, you know, hey, you know, as part of this class, you have this opportunity, and it costs about $40. So I charge them $20 each semester. So the first $20 covers the merchandise. So $20 gets them a t-shirt, the sunglasses, the stickers, the patches. I buy all, you know, I take their money. I have an activity account that I operate at school, and I take their money and buy it with that. The second $20 comes in the second semester, and that pays for the party. So that covers their sort of admission ticket to laser tag and the food at laser tag. Because laser tag is about $10 a person, and food is about $5 a kid when you buy it at that kind of scale. So yes, the kids. So all that merchandise is kid driven. Like, I don't have any outside funding for that. So like the kids are all into that. So let's see, is that actually dinner? That's my BC calculus class, and it's kind of small. And again, sort of as a feature of our schedule, I see them on Wednesdays for their long period block, and they have lunch afterwards, but lunch isn't until like 12:45. That's a long time to wait for lunch. So I tell them, I was like, you know what, we have a lot of time. We're going to do snacks on Wednesdays. So, we do snacks on Wednesdays. So that's them eating their Wednesday snacks while they work there, under the stipulation that they don't get, Cheetos on things, which they're mostly successful with. Uh, Oh, if a kid can't afford it. So typically that does happen. And I tell them up front, I say, you know, hey, if you're in a situation where $40 is a lot, like, please tell me. And it's fine. There's enough overhead built into the $40 to cover a kid who can't afford it. I tell them up front, I was like, I do not want the money to be a barrier to entry. I want everyone to be able to do it. So yes, if a kid can't afford it, that does not disbar them. I have ways of dealing with that. Distraction over routine. So that's more me. So, I get sidetracked like super easy. So that's more for, I will kind of just say, I've said, no, math, like back to math, or I'll just launch right back into it. And that's sort of the signal, like, all right, we're done here. I kind of try to keep an internal timer of like, you know, only a couple minutes. As much as I would like to sit there and talk about whatever for 20 odd minutes. I don't know. That comes down to a personal time management thing. I've gotten better at that over the years. There were some kids who figured out that I'm easily distracted. And what they told me later is that they would come into class and they would sit there and game plan random things they could ask me, knowing that that would buy them some time. And I'm like, okay, you know, props for being clever there, but all right, I definitely have to work on that. So that's pretty funny. And if you're wondering, so I will, this presentation will turn into a blog post at some point, probably early next week. I will try to write up what I discussed here and include all these photos. So if you're wondering where you can find this more, there will be a blog post about it later. I will tweet it. Any other questions? I think somebody also jumped the, have you been to RCA? What is RCA? Ron Clark Academy. No, what is, what's their deal? And somebody did put the Baby Shark song link into the chat. If you're interested in getting that stuck in your head for the rest of the night, I'm sorry.
So while you're putting more questions in the chat window, I just want to remind people, again, we are recording. So I will turn the recording off probably at 7 if we're finished. And then you can come back and watch it again later and share it with others. Next week, we will be discussing two nice things, bracelets and fun with proofs with Alyssa Miller. So make sure you join us next week for that. This has been amazing. Thank you, Jonathan, so much. And if you have questions, you can continue to throw them in that chat window.
Do they take any assessments without their notebooks? Yes, they do. How do they do with retention? It could be better. So some of the retention stuff goes to, like a standard based grading system. I've done a thing where, I don't know if you've heard of the method where you'll put a topic on a test and then you'll, give them a second attempt, like a built in second attempt the next week. I do that. So that helps them kind of remember latent things. A thing with what I did start doing, so if I allowed them to have their notebooks, I tried to ask questions that were not necessarily like scripted from classwork. So it wasn't the kind of thing where they could just find some piece of classwork and copy it. Like they would have to discuss something for me or sort of talk out a situation. So a lot of like paragraph writing kind of things. Yeah, the common assessment bag, I feel you there. I don't necessarily deal with that. I don't know, some kind of study guide or something. That's not a area of my strength, unfortunately. Let's see. Ron Clark Academy. Oh, you know, I have heard of this guy. Ron Clark. I think he's made very enthusiastic videos about active expressions is what I remember. He's interesting. I don't know if I'm totally down with what he's selling, but I have heard of him. Thank you, Kate. Appreciate it. Let's see. Any other?
Again, if you have more questions, feel free to pop them in there, either in the Q&A or the chat window.
Thank you, Howie. You are, I've seen you from afar. I know you only as a Twitter legend and apparently president of Fawn's fan club. Thank you, Stephanie. Fun baby shark facts. Since I just have the mic here, there are seasonal versions of that song. So there's a normal one, there's a Christmas one, there's a Valentine's Day one, there's a Halloween one. There's one for every occasion. There's one about cars. It's called the baby car song. It's really a diverse genre of YouTube videos there. Oh no, Stephanie, I knew what you meant there. You're good. No problem, Kelly. Thank you.
So again, any more questions before we wrap it up? Because your time is growing short and we want to respect Jonathan's time. The recording should be available in probably 2 or 3 hours, Susan.
Oh yeah, the turnaround time on those things is quick. Mm-hmm.
So if there's no more questions.
Oh, sorry you came in late. Yeah, the recording will be up real soon.
Yep.
And again, there'll be a blog post accompanying this in a few days.
So if there's no more questions, I am going to let Jonathan go because it's always a bit of work for the presenter to put things together and to talk for a whole hour. So thank you, Jonathan.
I was impressed. I hit the time mark like right on.
Nailed it. I'm stopping the recording and hope to see you again in a future Global Math Department presentation.